welcome to On Tour with Sport 24. I'm Emma Saunders, and this is Sport 24's very own pocket guide to what makes a city a sporting city. Each episode will bring you a real flavour of a city's sports and culture. Find out what the locals recommend and get the inside scoop of what you should experience when you visit. It's what Sport 24 is all about, a sports channel that connects onboard passengers to those unmissable live sporting moments. So whether you're flying at 35,000 feet or relaxing on your ocean cruise, you can be watching the game live. It's the only way to travel. So buckle up and sit back. This is On Tour with Sport 24.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sport 24, we'd like to welcome you to Dubai.
Now, for this episode, we're in the Middle East and Dubai. And as always, I'm joined by our TikToker extraordinaire, Rob Adcock. How are we, Rob?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm really excited, actually, to get into this because when I picture Dubai, I have been there once. And the first thing I think of is, you know, the marina, you've got these luxury designer shops everywhere, lots of glitzy restaurants, stunning beaches, but it's sporting landscape I'm not very familiar with. So what can you tell us?
The sport is fantastic. And obviously we've got the top five coming up a little bit later on. But for me, whenever I think of somewhere like the Middle East and specifically Dubai, is about the sunshine. Yeah. Do you know, when you start talking about a place and no matter where you are, what conditions you've got, if you can talk about somewhere that's hot and that's got nice beaches, it just makes life better. Yeah. Just imagine if you're on a plane now and you're on the way there, you must be so excited to just get off that plane and get the heat. That's what it's all about, Emma. That is what this podcast should be about, sunshine.
Yes, I think that's the first thing, actually, for our listeners. One word of advice, slap on that factor 50. You're going to need it in Dubai. It is hot out there. The sun can be pretty strong. But what can we take in, Rob, from a sporting perspective on the ground?
It's one of those places, isn't it, Dubai, where, you know, when you look at places around the world, the cities that seem like they've got everything when it comes to sport, that, for me, is Dubai. You've got the golf. It's obviously really well known for that. Some amazing things happen there. Just think about playing golf in that setting. It sounds like bliss. The other thing it's world famous for is, of course, the horse racing. The Dubai World Cup is one of the showpiece events when it comes to anything around horse racing. But one of the things that always catches my eye is Sail GP. I know it's something we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the podcast, but I've got a friend who's just come from working on it and said it is just one of the best events, not just because of how good it is and what it looks like, but because the actual quality of the sport is exceptional. And finally, something I know we're going to talk about a lot is the Dubai Rugby Sevens, because that is iconic.
So we're delighted to say that we have broadcaster and journalist Tom Bushell with us from Dubai. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Hi, Emma. Hi, Rob. Lovely. Very well. Thank you. And I hope you guys are well too. And I have to say, you've just been talking about the sunshine that this place is known for and also its sport. And I am putting the two together right now because I'm talking to you from a sporting event and it is closing in on 30 degrees. So there we go. Summed it up in one sentence.
Other than, of course, the all-year-round sunshine, as we've mentioned a little bit, this sort of stunning high-rise city landscape in Dubai, the restaurants, the golf courses. Why should people visit?
Well, yeah, it's year-round sunshine pretty much. I mean, obviously the summer does get a little warm, a little too warm, if you like, but you'll stay indoors in the AC. But in the winter, I have to say, it's a phenomenal season of lovely weather, great sporting events, a lovely outdoors community and way of life. I mean, everywhere you go, you'll see people playing cricket on the streets. You'll see people dining outside. There's a lovely community feel here. And in terms of coming here to visit, if you come between the months of, let's say, September and March or April, then you will really get some of the biggest sporting events in the world. And we'll chat more about them as we go. But some of them are even free to attend, which are not a lot of people will know about unless they've lived here or been here before. So there really is a greater array of things to do. And the likes of dining out, I think many people think Dubai is very much high-end, Michelin star, and can I afford it? But the city really does offer a wide range for every budget. One of the best restaurants in the city is Indian and Pakistani street food for no more than £5, if you like, for a great meal.
I mean, we've got Rob with us, who won't be ashamed to say he likes to do things on a shoestring budget, don't you, Rob? And that is not something that you tend to associate with the luxury that you see in Dubai. But tell us a bit more about that then, Tom. It's perhaps much more inclusive, would you say, in some ways?
Yeah, I think one of the best things about the city and the emirate as a whole, if you like, is it really does offer you everything that you could possibly look for. As I say, if you want to go into the mountains in the Hatta region of the emirate of Dubai, you've got great kayaking, you've got great mountains, you've got great hiking trails to go on, and there are groups that will take you on tours around those mountains, and or if you want to hike with friends, they're open to the public. Kayaking the same, and then when you come back into the city, you have all of that glam, if you like, the glam side of Dubai, but you also have you know, the beach sports that you can get involved in, the community leagues. I think what Dubai is brilliant with as well is it's a hotbed of nationalities coming together. So you get into a taxi and you'll talk about cricket with the taxi driver. You work with a South African and you'll end up talking about rugby. And the list is endless. Everyone loves sport here and everyone gets involved with it, whether that's going to a big event or just playing in their local community leagues at the weekend. It's lovely to see.
Tom, you know, when you chat to people and you say that you spend a lot of time in Dubai, what is the first thing people always say to you?
Well, one of the... I think there's a fascination with the heat because it's a desert and it's Arabia. And can you live in that sort of temperature, if you like? And like I said, in the winter, it's like a lovely European summer, sort of mid-20s, and a nice light breeze in the evening. It's gorgeous. In the summer, however, it does get often up to the likes of 40 degrees, which is challenging outdoors. But the great thing about Dubai is they understand that and they have built a community indoors as well. Now, the shopping malls are enormous. They are built to be almost town centres in themselves. And of course, sport is in that factor as well. And the fact that you can go to one of the shopping malls and you can go skiing because they have an enormous indoor skiing centre.
Am I right in saying as well, because of the heat, particularly in that sort of peak summertime period, a lot of these attractions are open quite late?
Yeah, there's very much a late culture here. Yeah, the cinema showings, for instance, will go on until the early hours. The shopping malls will open until, as you say, Emma, yeah, up until around midnight or so, if not a bit later as well. Certainly the big malls like the Dubai Mall, where the Burj Khalifa is and the fountains are, that, you know, will have people in and out of there until the early hours. So it's almost a 24-hour city, almost.
Well, one of the Emirates' main attractions are its stunning golf courses. From the Emirates Golf Club to the Jumeirah Golf Estates, where the DP World Tour Championship is played, there are a number of stunning options for people to look to both play or spectate at major events. So, Tom, I think this is your speciality, isn't it? Tell us a little bit more about what it's like covering golf in Dubai.
Yeah, Dubai is a mad golf city, if you like. I mean, perfect weather conditions for the sport for much of the year, and even people living here or even coming to visit will still play in the summer as well, as long as you get an early tea time before the worst of the heat through the summer. Golf has just taken off here, and iconic courses such as Emirates Golf Club, I think we've all seen the pictures of how that was a desert, and then suddenly this golf course, the first grass golf course in the Middle East, it was the Emirates Golf Club, and then of course it was on its own in the desert. Nowadays it's surrounded by skyscrapers, and the best of the tournaments around the world come here as well. The DP World Tour Championship has grown to be one of the standout golf events in the world. Some people call it almost like the fifth major, just because of the caliber of players that play it. And it's growing all the time as well in terms of the events they're getting. There's now a five-week run, a stretch in the Middle East, which is just event after event after event, week in, week out, to start the year. So it's an impressive place if you're a golf fan.
Tom, you know, when it comes to the weather, golf being an outdoor game, How does it work? Is it one of those things like you mentioned there where you've got to make sure you have a time when you can play when it's not as hot? Is that just how you have to do it?
Yeah, so, I mean, in the winter, I've played golf a few times in Dubai. In fact, I sort of learned how to play in Dubai because I never really played in the UK before moving out here. In the winter, it's perfect. The golf courses are so well catered for as well. You'll have drink services coming around on buggies to make sure everyone's hydrated, and snacks. There are, you know, places you can pick up some food every other hole. It's brilliant like that. And in the summer, as a lot of people I think coming over here might not notice, but you can essentially get really good discounts on playing the golf courses here because they know that not too many people are going to want to play in the summer. But if you get a tea time early enough, say 6 a.m. or 6:30, something like that, then you will get a round of golf in at a discount, albeit in the summer months. But if you do it, you know, if you're wrapped up by 10 a.m. or so, you've missed the worst of the heat in the summer. So there are options, despite the despite a large portion of the year being quite warm.
Tom, you had me at buggies and snacks and drinks being delivered, but as soon as you mentioned the word discount, I was booking my flights.
exactly. If you like your golf and eating a bit of refreshments along the way, this is the place for you, Rob.
And whilst it does cater to the likes of Rob, who perhaps are a bit new to the game of golf and might be there for a good deal, equally, Tom, Dubai now, it does really attract the superstars of the golfing world, and actually superstars across many industries that have interest in the sport of golf with its incredible courses.
Yeah, I think what Dubai does, not just in golf, but in all sports, with tennis and things like that, is they look after the sports stars, the stars of that sport, very well. So when they come out here to compete, they are, you know, their hotels are paid for them. You know, being a golfer is hard work. If you're not in the top 20, it's hard work. You're paying for all your travel. You're paying for your hotel, for the event you're playing at. You're paying for your caddy's travel and hotel. And Dubai sorts all that out for the players coming here. And I think for them, they really appreciate that. Hence, they'll come back time and time again. They'll tell their other players, their friends within on the tour, you know, got to go to Dubai, it's great. And I think that only helps the calibre of events in the city. I've seen that time and time again with tennis and golf in Dubai. And it really does help the sport grow here, but also the fan base grows here because you get really up close and personal to these star players. I mean, the field at some of the Dubai golf events I've been to and been involved in, it's almost like a major. I went to the Open at St Andrews a couple of years ago and paid over £200 to get in. Whereas you'll come and see the fields of players that play here and the sun's shining and it's free to get in. And it's a wonderful way to experience and get up close to the sport you love.
Well, let's stick with golf and hear from someone now who has played on these spectacular golf courses we've been talking about. Rob has been chatting with three-time major champion Padraig Harrington.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's a real honour to have you on. I'm going to start by talking to you about the quality of the golf courses in and around the UAE. What are they like?
You know, there's all sorts of courses, but there are some absolutely brilliant championship golf courses. There's some regular sort of members, I suppose you call them, that country club type golf courses, very pleasant to play. But the one great thing about them all out there is they're in ideal condition. Certainly when we go there, you know, the ideal time to go obviously out to Dubai is, for us, is I suppose from November through till probably all the way to the end of February would be good time to play great golf. And the courses are in perfect condition. They're always fun to play. And to be honest, the facilities with them are brilliant. They all have their own ranges and facilities, balls to hit. Some of them have par 3 golf courses. They all provide nice clubhouse facilities. So it is an ideal place to spend some time home in your game, working on your game, to get away from the winter weather here, which is, it's, you know, I grew up playing in pretty tough conditions, but I've gone a little soft as a pro now. I like my nice weather and warm weather and firm turf to hit off. So yeah, look, you can't find a better place at this time of the year. Or at least you struggle to find a better place. This is as good as you get. And with everything that's going on off the golf course, I think for players and for people, it's not just all about the golf. So we love golf, but you can get pretty bored about that if it's 24/7. So Dubai offers up quite a bit outside of the golf. So you can get your work done, enjoy your golf, and then obviously feel like you're living your life a little bit outside of it.
That was going to be my next question. I want to get some of the insight that you've got. You've played at some of the best places all around the world. Some of the things that you've achieved are like fantastic. When you land in Dubai, what is that feeling like? What are you excited about? What kind of let us into your mindset and your thoughts when you touch down on the tarmac?
You know, I suppose it's actually when you're flying in, you look out and you see the city and you just, it's a wonder what they've done. I think every other country in the Middle East needs to thank them. You know, at the end of the day, they set out, and I've been gone since 1996, they set out, you know, to build Dubai City. And everybody looked and said, oh, this is a great idea. But I don't think any of us could have envisaged that they actually would deliver what they have delivered. And obviously all the other cities are there trying to copy them and be like Dubai. But the foresight and the carry through with it is startling. When I first came there, we used to drive out to the Emirates Golf Club and it was like a 12-lane wide highway. And you're driving along going, why have they built this? You know, who's ever going to use this road? And now if we all know, you know, maybe the one downside of Dubai is you have to avoid the traffic because that road is so busy. It's phenomenal achievement how far they've come. And that blows me away every time I go there. And they've built a lot with it, you know. As I said, they have continued. You know, the golf courses have expanded and the facilities have expanded. And generally, what I kind of find now when you go to Dubai, wherever you're kind of staying, there's enough to do in that area. So if you're going to stay up in the Palm, you kind of spend most of your time on the Palm. If you're going to stay down the Marina, spend most of your time there. If you're down JBR, you spend, because it is tough enough to get around. You will go once or twice somewhere else, but there's always enough to do in your little locality wherever you are. But it's astounding. No matter where you are, there's like 5-star hotels and restaurants in every little section you go to. So it is one place you don't need to, once you get to your hotel, you don't need to move too far to enjoy yourself for the week.
It sounds like it's one of those places that when you get the calendar, when you work out where you're going to be when throughout the next year, it's one of the places that you really look forward to.
Oh yeah, I think the trip to Dubai goes on the calendar before you even start the schedule, you know. Well, it's ideal for professional golfers because we have some great tournaments. And if you look at the Dubai Desert Classic, it's pretty close. Like it is the Middle East major at this stage, you know, and it's got a heritage. And we know like Abu Dhabi have a great tournament and everything that goes with it and other tournaments are there. But Dubai Desert Classic has the heritage. It's been running over, what, it's close to 35 years, maybe next year, 35 years, or it's 35 this year. But it has, because it's on the same golf course, which really does help, more or less all the time. Obviously, it was on the creek at times. People remember the 18th hole and the great shots hit Monty's driver onto the green. It has that drama. So that's turned itself into an elite worldwide tournament. And will be there forever, to be honest. And you know, who knows, will it be... I know that some people might think this is hypeable, but it could be the fifth major in 50 years' time. So, yeah. Everything about it is golfing wise, stature wise, is brilliant, but it also lends itself. And I said this the other day, actually, you know, if a player goes out there to play, he wants to play well and would dearly like to have his game when he gets there. But if he doesn't play well, he has an eye on these are perfect practice conditions. And what I mean, that the facilities are great, but the weather is great. Everything is laid on, which is quite interesting. Every gym in every hotel and every facility has a professional grade gym. Like, it's not like a hotel gym. None of these, they all have lifting bars. They all have the racks. You don't find these, you know, a lot of hotels, you'd be doing well to get a few free weights and a treadmill. These all have proper gyms. So the players are there, if they don't play well on the golf course, they're there to train and get their game in shape for the year. So the difference between that and the Irish Open, if the Irish Open, if players don't play well, they're there to have a week off and enjoy themselves. If they don't play well in Dubai, they're actually there to do some hard work and get their game in shape for the year. That's why you'll see all the coaches, everybody goes to that Middle East swing, because it really is, we'd like to play well, but there's a lot of work to be done as well.
There'll be a lot of people listening to this, though, that say, it's all right for you. You're a 3-time major winner. I'm only just like, I just play on my local course. I'm nowhere near that standard. What do you think it's like for the average golfer that wants to go and enjoy Dubai and just have a couple of rounds?
Well, it's aspirational, to be honest. It depends on where you want to go. Like, if you want to go and play the Emirates course or the Creek or go to Jumeirah Estates, you've seen tournaments on those golf courses, and you know, it's something you can aspire to, hit that shot over the pond, or the lake or pond on the 18th at Emirates. You know, so there is quite a bit of aspiration there. But also, there's plenty of other golf courses that they are all pay and play. I don't think there's a private course in Dubai. So it's all, if you want to pay, you can play. And there's different levels. Like, and a lot of them have floodlit golf and par 3 golf. I know you can go up to the Ernie Els course, and you always get a really nice welcome up there. They have a lovely par 3 course which you can play in the evening times. Kids are welcome. So there's quite a friendly welcome in a lot of these golf courses. Most of these courses are orientated to the family. They have, you know, a lot of members that use it as a country club, so their whole family come down, play golf, dine. Kids go hit shots in the evening on the range when the parents are eating. You know, they go out and play the par 3. So there's a lot of courses like that that's pretty friendly. Clearly, you could turn up earlier in the day and be competitive. I know there's a lot of organized games for young pros and young amateurs to compete in. So there's some competitive golf nearly all the time out there. But there's plenty of relaxed golf. The golf courses are not in any... They're not stuffy at all, actually, to be honest. So you it's quite relaxed. You can go up and play. And usually, well, I think always, you get a very nice welcome.
You mentioned the locals. You've been going for years, like you say. Have you noticed a real uptake, a real kind of thirst for the game amongst the people that are living there?
Yeah, obviously, when we first went there, it was only the expats that played golf. Yeah. Now the genuine locals are playing, and you see it started off, you know, probably 20 years ago. You know, the schools would have programs and we'd go play tournaments, and we'd do clinics and lessons for the kids. But they have built now, nearly every course has an academy. You see the Pete Cowan Academy out there, and they pretty much all the schools will have the kids come out and go through it. And if a kid gets any sort of liking for golf, and this is pretty much true around the world too, you know, the whole idea of golf around the world and what they're trying to is give every kid they can a go at it. And the ones that like it, there's always going to be, if you're a kid and you actually want to play golf, there's always somewhere that's going to want you and teach you and coach you. They're just looking for the kids that just are interested. And so same in Dubai, you know, some of these kids who've come out with classes, they get bored and have no interest, but other kids go, I quite like this. And that's where you're seeing the development coming through. And now golf, well, it's a while now, it's close to 8 years. It's an Olympic sport, or a little longer, yeah. I suppose, since it came in. So there's obviously government programs and funding for kids to get into golf, because it's an Olympic sport. So you would see, you do see the odd kid now, you know, playing in the pro events, sometimes as amateurs and things like that. But you will see, you know, another, it mightn't be that long, but you know, you probably talk another 4 to 10 years, 5 to 10 years, you'll probably see where they'll actually start being competitive. And actually not just on the bottom of the leaderboard, but actually getting themselves up on the top of the leaderboard.
Bearing in mind that this is a family podcast, have you got any stories from playing in Dubai that you can regale us with?
Yeah. The funniest thing that happened to me, look, I've been going for years, as I said, and it has changed. Golfing-wise, the funniest thing that happened to me is one year, and remember, it's always the start of the year, so you're trying new things. So I was trying wearing glasses. So I've turned up with glasses, and I've got the... they're trial pairs, so they're a pretty big pair of glasses. And on the 18th hole in one of the rounds, I dumped it in the water with my wedge shot. I covered the ball with a sod nearly. Nearly didn't make it to the water, but it popped into the water. And the reason was, they used to have a fountain on the 18th, and the spray from the fountain got on my glasses as I was swinging, and I panicked and hit a fat. So that ended the glasses. And I said, no, I have to learn something else. So laser surgery was the answer instead of wearing glasses for me. I would never give up any advantage to anybody. So that, I don't know if that's kind of unique to me, that's the fountain made me hit it in the water. At least I'm going to stick with that excuse.
It feels to me like we've got a newspaper headline here. So yeah. A three-time major winner throws away glasses and opts for laser surgery because of playing golf in Dubai. I feel like we've got ourselves. Next time you see that on a newspaper headline, you can thank this podcast. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because it was one of those shots that you actually don't want to make a big deal about, because it was so bad. I'd hate that they might have it on tape somewhere and be able to bring it out. Because it actually did take a bounce before I'm hitting the sand wedge, and it took a bounce before it made it to the water. I think I even had time to say sit to it. So it was a pretty bad shot. I'm sticking with that excuse.
Yes, that's okay. It. If you've got that video, if you tweet us... We'd love it. We'd love it. We'd share that, wouldn't we?
That, you know, that's the future of golf. The future will be all shots will be covered.
For someone who spent so much time in Dubai, you must have so many recommendations for people that have never been before, that maybe have been but kind of stick to a different area. Can you give us one recommendation? I'll be honest with you, most of this podcast always comes back to food. So can you give us a recommendation of somewhere to eat in Dubai, which you has got your stamp of approval?
Wherever area you're staying in, you can kind of find the best of restaurants there. It astounds me, actually, how many quality restaurants there are. I do always seem to go back to Maine in the Doubletree down the JBR. Every year I probably go a couple of times. I get lovely steak and the fish tacos to start. It really is, yeah, I go back there a lot. Ling Ling in the Royal Atlantis was really cool. We were in there this year, and it really, really, a couple of times again. It's amazing when you find a nice restaurant, you do like to go back a second time. But Ling Ling as a Asian style restaurant in the Royal Atlantis, and Maine as a just a contemporary, I don't know what you would really call it. Anyway, it's steaks and fish in Maine, and that's very good.
You've got my utmost respect, because I'm one of those kind of people as well, where if I know where I'm going to eat, I know what I'm going to eat as well. If I've got a favourite, I stick to it.
You know, if I've gone to a restaurant and I've liked what I've had, I'll certainly, I'll be always looking at what everybody else is having to get a feel for it. If I do like going to a restaurant. I don't look at the menu. I'm not like that. But I do like going to a restaurant knowing what I'm looking forward to have.
Thank you so much, Quinn, on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure. It's been a real honour to have you on. So thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you.
Well, it's great to get an insight about the golf on offer in Dubai. But Rob, you've been busy doing your research. As in every episode, we want to give you, the listener, the best tips about our chosen city, all in one handy list. Whether that be places to have a bite to eat or simply somewhere you just have to visit. It is time for our Dubai Tourist Top 5.
So I've got to start by saying that the majority of these have come as really strong recommendations. Got a few mates that only go to Dubai on holiday. You know, you've got a friend, I'm sure anyone listening to this can relate to this. They've got a friend that finds something that they like and then they stick to it religiously. Well, that has led to a few of these recommendations. So they're not just my recommendations, Emma. These are potentially the greatest things that you can do in Dubai.
Tried and tested.
You cannot beat these. These are the best top five you'll get. And I'll start at number five with Dubai Creek. It is one of the best things to do in and around Dubai, and is virtually free. It takes about one dirham to ride across Dubai Creek for the Golden Spy Shoot. But for me, it's one of those places where whenever I get somewhere, I want to get a bit of a wander around. I want to get a sense of what the place is like now, but what it used to be like. And this is the place to go. If you don't know what it is, it's like a natural seawater inlet that divides the two sections of Dubai. So it's basically where it all began. So first thing to do, as soon as you land, get yourself down to Dubai Creek and you'll get a real sense of what it is now, but also what it used to be. And as we always like, Emma, it doesn't cost much. Thomas, is that not the strongest start to a top five?
Oh, I love that, Rob. Dubai Creek is it's a very special place of the city, actually. And it's one of those places. If it wasn't for Dubai Creek, I don't think this city would exist, because it originated there. It was a little fishing port, all because of Dubai Creek. So, very strong start, and a great place to explore as well. It's brilliant.
So at number four, while you're down that end of the city, take a look at the Dubai Frame. You know, at the start of this, Emma, when I said one of my friends goes there religiously. Well, his name is Tom, and he's quite a morose character. But when I said to him we're going to be doing this episode all about Dubai, he says, The first thing you've got to do is get yourself down to the Dubai Frame because it is mint. And I have never heard him that excited. He described it as this huge, great, big frame where you can see an amazing view of the city. So it's got like a glass bottom. I won't use the exact phrase that he did to describe how it made him feel when you're that up high and you can see the ground, but I'll let you fill in the blanks. You can see new and old Dubai from 150 meters up in the air, and it's meant to be amazing at sunset and sunrise. Give it a go. At number three is the first of two food recommendations. So Bukatir is this one. It is, well, we know that Dubai is known for its glitz and glamour, fancy restaurants, but this isn't that. This is described to me as real UAE. It's got this kind of reputation, this restaurant has, as a bit of a rundown fish shack that served reasonably priced food that is, and I quote, well nice. Well, it's moved now, it's had a bit of a rebrand, but the food is just as good. It's one of those places, you know, when you hear about it and you think, is this a wind-up? But then when you get there, the food is banging. If you want nice food in Dubai where you do not have to remortgage, this is the place for you. I'm going to spell it to you. It's B-U-Q-T-A-I-R, because everyone loves spelling on a podcast, Emma.
Well, Tom, it sounds delicious, but can you vouch for that? Is it well nice, as Rob just said?
It's well nice. It's well nice. And it's a lovely spot to go to. And you know, when you go there, only the people that know about it go there. So it's, yeah, it feels quite exclusive. Lovely setting by the water. Gorgeous.
Tom, this is what the top five's all about. It's that little bit of insight, those real gems that you don't get anywhere else. And I'm going to go in straight at number two. This one is a bit more popular. This one is Kite Beach. It does exactly what it says on the tin. It is white sands, gorgeous weather, just watching the world go by and watching people have a go at water sports. You've got, as you can imagine, it's massively popular for kite surfing, hence the name, but you can do wakeboarding, paddle boarding, you can play beach volleyball, you can even just have a sunbathe, or that seems a bit too strenuous for you. The best thing about it, it does not cost a single penny to get in. Tom?
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Yeah, it's a good top five, this. Kite Beach, one of my top three beaches in Dubai, I'd say.
Okay, it's one of the top three. Right, number one. It was always going to come back to food, as it always does, doesn't it? Jones the Grocer. Do you remember I told you at the start of this about Grumpy Tom? Well, he said this place is the best food that he's ever tasted. And he's from the Staffordshire Moorlands, so his diet usually consists of chips and oatcakes. You know that is a place that you see on social media when you think, yes, it looks nice, but is it going to be as good as everyone says? This place is the exception. It is just as good. If you go on one very popular, let's say, restaurant review site, it has got 5 out of 5, and probably 99.99% of everything they get is exceptional. The food looks that good, it makes me giddy, and they even do food classes as well. It's got loads of different locations around Dubai, but the one off the beach looks like it is different gravy.
Well, it's a strong finish, Rob, to your tourist top five. But Tom, I think we have to come back to you to complete your top three beaches.
And I would agree that the top five was brilliant. And I thought, Rob, we were on par all the way until we got to your number one. I haven't been to Jones the Grocer, so I can't vouch for it.
Guess where you're going as soon as this podcast is done, and I'm looking forward to those pictures already.
Yeah, I'll make sure as soon as we've finished today, I'm going straight there. And in terms of just going back to the beaches very quickly, the two others in my top three, Kite Beach is in there, and then the Sunset Beach, which is just next to the Burj Al Arab. And when the sun sets, hence the name, it is phenomenal, the view you get there. And the other beach I love is actually called the Secret Beach. Oh. There's no signpost for it. Not many people know about it, but you can drive your car right onto it and you can have a little picnic or a barbecue. I think you can have a barbecue. And it's a lovely little setting to have a nice little, just, you know, just see the day and relax. And yeah, it's not too crowded, which is nice as well. Hence the name Secret Beach.
Tom, are you 100% certain it's not someone's like own private beach that you just let yourself onto? Because we're not on this podcast.
It might be. Yeah, I wondered why people were shouting at me.
We are not encouraging trespassing, to be clear. Well, it all sounds so stunning. And if you're listening and you've just been or you're planning a trip to Dubai, then we would love to hear any of your travel hints and tips and see your pictures and videos. You can follow Sport24 on Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram, and use the hashtag MySport24 to get in touch. Well, let's turn our attention now to another massive event in Dubai. One of the world's richest horse races, the Dubai World Cup, has been a mainstay on the Dubai sporting calendar since it was inaugurated in 1996. It is the culmination of the Dubai Racing Carnival at Maiden Racecourse, which runs from November to March. And the World Cup night card in late March remains one of the richest cards in the world, offering a whopping $30.5 million. In prize money, with the feature race run on the dirt track, that with a prize purse of $12 million. My goodness me, Tom, this sounds like quite the sporting spectacle.
It's a sporting spectacle, but I also have to say the grandstand at Maidan Racecourse, I think it's a kilometre long, and it's got to be up there as one of the biggest grandstands in the world. The length of it is a kilometre, which has to be seen in itself, never mind if there's any actual horse racing happening. But yeah, it's a phenomenal event. You talk about the big horse race meetings around the world. The Melbourne Cup is terrific. Cheltenham, you know, Newmarket, Epsom, Kentucky Derby. But the Dubai World Cup is something special. Under the lights, floodlit for that evening night card, it's got the atmosphere. You can feel the atmosphere building as the day and the afternoon progresses and it gets into the night time. And when you know so much money is at stake as well, it really does add to the flavour. And also, the entertainment they put on after all the sporting action is phenomenal. I've seen the likes of Elton John come on at the end of the night, or Sting as well. So they do it well and they know what they're doing. It's a great sporting event.
Tom, it doesn't sound like you have to be a real racing fan to enjoy it. It sounds like a proper event regardless.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those where, you know, dress up and go along and just enjoy the spectacle that it is. And it's, you know, it's the city coming together. I think I'm thinking about the Hong Kong, you know, horse racing meets, which I think we've all seen images of and videos of. A great, just a buzz in the air. There's something very, very special about it.
Is it quite inclusive, though? I suppose everything you've described, again, it kind of has that luxe feel to it. But how easy is it, you know, if you're coming through Dubai at that moment in the calendar, how easy is it to get a ticket and to go along?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it doesn't sell out. If you think they've got so much land there, and as I say, with that grandstand being a kilometre long or something like that, there's a lot of room, and so there's a lot of spaces to get people in, and it's a huge site. So very rarely will there be a, you know, maybe right up to the last days before the event, but very rarely will you not be able to get a ticket. And even if you're going on your own, you'll soon get chatting to people and make some new friends. It's one of those sporting occasions where everyone's there just to have a good time, whether the sport's on or not.
Tom, for me, one of the best things about going to the horse racing is getting the suit out of the wardrobe and getting it a bit fancy. Do you know what I mean? What is it, similar yeah. kind of thing over there?
Absolutely. You've got to get dressed up for the Dubai World Cup. It's one of those sporting events where you have to think about what you're going to wear. And there'll be plenty of photographers around as well, taking pictures of those they think have dressed up better than others.
Well, they do sound like quite incredible facilities at the horse racing in Dubai, and some atmosphere as well along that 1 kilometre stand. Let's hear now from someone right at the heart of the racing itself. We've been speaking with ex-jockey turned trainer Jamie Osborne.
So the top weight flashing steel, ridden by Jamie Osborne, has defied 12 stone, fighting his way all the way from the final fence.
I'm Jamie Osborne. I'm a racehorse trainer, primarily based in Lambourne, Berkshire. But annually, we take a team of horses out to Maidan in Dubai to compete in the carnival there, the World Cup Carnival, which starts for us in January and ends on World Cup night at the end of March. The racecourse venue, Maidan itself, is probably one of the most beautiful race courses you'll ever see. There's a real sense of atmosphere when you get there. The first race is often run in the dimming light, and then the floodlights come on. There's a real sense of spectacle there. And you're competing good horses against other people's good horses from around the world. the prize money is significantly better than it is in the UK relative to the grade of race. The facilities are excellent. The stables that our horses live in are five star.
From the Big Apple, Toast of New York has charged to the front under Jamie Spencer and raced away from Asmar. Emirates Flyer third, Giovanni Baldini much too late. Toast of New York in front, and Toast of New York wins the Derby handsomely.
Yeah, we won the 2014 UAE Derby at Maidan with Toast of New York. I always believed we were in with a great chance of winning, otherwise I wouldn't have taken the horse. But the world didn't really believe, because we'd taken a fairly unorthodox route to such a big race. We won two races at Wolverhampton, not the normal nursery ground for a UAE Derby horse. The lead up to a World Cup meeting is... It's pretty exciting. You know, Dubai do it very well. There are a lot of events on, everybody there talking about all the races. And obviously everybody bringing their best horses. The prize money is so spectacular that, you know, everybody wants to have a piece of it. So we were going in there slightly as an underdog, but thankfully that's not how it turned out. And he won the race well. Certainly the most valuable race I've ever won. And it was one of those phenomenal days that I'll never forget. I mean, I love Dubai. It's an ever-changing city. It's growing. It's full of lots of people from lots of different places in the world. There's no such thing as a bad meal in Dubai. I will always take my clients and my friends to a restaurant called Ozone on a Thursday. It's kind of home from home for me. I always seem to manage to get the same table, and the lunch always goes on a little bit longer than ideal, but everyone has a fantastic time.
Well, great to hear about the horse racing in Dubai and all it has to offer. We've also got really stuck in on the golf scene and some of the incredible golf courses across the city. What about Sail GP? That's usually hosted late each year, I think, as part of the Sail GP calendar. And Abu Dhabi also added to that calendar in 2024. So you've got back-to-back events there in the UAE.
Sailing's a big sport here, actually, just again, because the weather's, you know, it's an outdoor lifestyle. And even the kids in schools here will get sailing lessons as part of the curriculum, which is brilliant, really. Lovely sailing clubs there. You know, they've got a lot of heritage about them. And they're wonderful places to go and hang out and learn to sail. The wind can be a little bit on and off now and again, but I guess that's the same in most places. But yeah, nice waters to get out on the boat and have a good sail. And when a big sporting event like Sail GP comes here, it's a great spectacle. And they've done sailing well in both Dubai and down the road in Abu Dhabi.
So away from the sailing, Tom, the rugby sevens.
Yeah, it's a great event. It's a party, is what the Rugby Sevens is. You'll notice a theme, actually, with sporting events in Dubai, whether that's the Dubai World Cup, the golf, the tennis, or the Rugby Sevens. It's a chance for people to have a good time. And the sport is a backdrop, but equally important. Yeah, the Rugby Sevens, it's unique in the fact that it's way out in the desert. It's a half an hour drive out to the desert. And yeah, that's been going for decades, and it's just got stronger and stronger. And I think now it's well known to be one of the Sevens standout events. The Hong Kong Sevens is one that I think everybody knows about. Whereas now Dubai is up there just because it's got such a reputation for not only attracting the best teams and the best ex-legend players playing as well, but also the party you can have there as well.
Entertainment, it's a big pull factor, isn't it, to Dubai. You know, a reason that a lot of people travel there is because the Seven Stadiums, it hosts huge gigs. They've had One Direction there, Justin yeah. Bieber, recently Ed Sheeran as well. And it's a multi-sport venue too. I think AC Milan came to town with David Beckham there, yeah. Real Madrid, West Ham. So there's been a bit of a theme across this podcast, and it does seem to be that as a sporting city, hospitality and making people feel comfortable and their experience really memorable, that's something that's really important to the city of Dubai, and I think what makes it so popular among people across the entire world.
Emma, I think you nailed it on the head there. Hospitality is the key word, whether that's for the actual players who are playing, but also for the fans that are coming. They want to give everybody a good time.
Well, for more on the Rugby Sevens, we've been speaking with someone who knows the sport inside out.
Hi, my name's Scott Hutton. I'm a former rugby player based in Dubai. I played in the Sevens, I've coached in the Sevens, and now I'm the judicial officer at the Sevens. And I've been a fan for many years.
One of the reasons why I really wanted to speak to you, Scott, is because you are someone who's both played and been a fan at the Sevens Stadium for the Rugby Sevens. What's it like in both experiences?
Both sides of the coin is great. When you're playing there, you want to be a supporter. The party's going on all around you. You've got the main stadium where the Invitational HSBC Sevens is going on, and a load of supporting pitches where there's, I think this year we had 17 different tournaments going at the same time, and F&B offerings all over the place. There are party zones, there's areas for the kids, there's loads for kids to do. But it's a great tournament to play in. There are so many teams involved. You can always go watch the big international rugby, you know?
Yeah, you mentioned the big international rugby. It's not just people at the peak of the sport. Lots of celebrities as well, I understand.
Yeah, there's a lot of celebrity spotting goes on. There are always celebs wandering about. It's very informal. It's very casual. So those celebs will be just mixing with everyone else. I met Andy Farrell this year, who was coaching Joining Jack, which is one of the charity teams that play here, traditionally rugby league players. And one of my stories, I played in the Invitational Vets or International Vets. So generally guys that played international rugby. And I was playing for, I think, Christina Noble, another charity, and we were listed to play in Joining Jack. And it was essentially the British rugby league team. There were guys playing, I think Paul Scunthorpe was playing, who at that time had just turned 35. And 35 was the age bracket for the Pets. And he was still playing Super League. At that stage, I'm retired. 6-7 years, it come on, that's not fair. That's one of the horror stories. But fortunately, luckily for me, I get injured in the warm-ups.
Yeah. Was it one of those where you're like, Amy's gone? Can't do it. Sorry.
Actually, it was a hamstring injury, yeah.
Why do you think that rugby is so popular in the UAE?
Look, it's all expat created, right? But the number of locals coming through now and getting involved, they're coming in, all the schools or a lot of the schools are now playing rugby, which is great to see. And I think I would call the old school rugby values are impressing people, and the local community is seeing that and what rugby can offer as a much bigger picture than just the sport.
Someone, a friend of mine who lives and plays around a similar kind of area, described to me the Rugby Sevens as a bit like being F1 for rugby. So you've got the glitz and glamour, you've got your celebrities, you've got your entertainment. It's not just the sport, there's just so much going on. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I think it is. I think generally that works, the difference being that when the F1 is on, you're stuck in your seat effectively, and whereas it just does, it's an event. F1 does it as well. They make it an event here. People go for the weekend. So I guess, yeah, it's a lot more like it than I thought. It's not something I'd thought about.
You can have that one. You can pass it off. You can say, Rob, on the On Tour with Sport 24 podcast, he said this, and you can take that with you. There you go. That's what we're always about, giving stuff back. In the 16 years that you've been there, though, you must have seen the sport grow exponentially. From when you started, when you got there in 2008 to where we are now, you must have seen it at grassroots levels to the people that you're seeing. It must be completely different, is it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. When I first arrived, there were worries about various clubs, and a couple of clubs went down. Dubai is never going to be a place where, to my mind, where you're going to have top level athletes coming to play rugby. It's a place where people come to live and work and play rugby, as opposed to the other way around. But over the last few years in particular, it really has grown. There's one club that springs to my mind that I remember starting. I know the guy who started the club, and it started as a handful of players and is now one of the biggest clubs in the country. The age group stuff from under, I think my kids first played at under fives, all the way through under 18 competitions. There was a big tournament last weekend at the sevens for age group rugby. It's massive. Age group stuff is enormous. So from that respect, yes, definitely grown. Where we often get tempted to look at the success of a sport by, you know, the success of its national team, for example. And that just doesn't apply to rugby in my mind. Certainly not here, because you turn up to the sevens ground on any given weekend, there'll be hundreds, if not thousands, people there. You've got tournaments going on. There is huge. And went from a situation where potentially clubs failing, not surviving, to new clubs popping up all over the place.
Whenever we get a guest on that knows the area as well as you do, Scott, we always get some local tips. Can you give us an idea of somewhere that's a nice restaurant? If we were to land, Emma and I were to land in Dubai tomorrow, where's the first place you're taking us?
As a haunt for expats in Dubai, Ravi's is always a winner. I think it's actually a Pakistani restaurant, but brilliant. You know, the first time I went to Ravi's, our first time with family, we were in the 12 of us, went in there, and you eat like a king with plastic plates and plastic cutlery. The food's brilliant, and it's for nothing. And this is a place that Adidas, I don't know if we're allowed to mention names, but they did a collaboration over the last couple of years with various different cities around the world. And Adidas did a collaboration with Ravi's restaurant in Dubai. So I'm delighted to see I have a pair of Ravi's training shoes. But it's not somewhere you go for your nice romantic night out. There's close to where I live in Jumeirah, there's a smashing little oyster bar, which is not an oyster bar as we might know it in London. You know, it's not flash, it's not expensive. It's somewhere you literally go, sit on the side of the marina and eat oysters for a very, very reasonable price. And if you're looking for a drink, as many of the rugby fans will be, like every city in the world, there's the ubiquitous Irish bar, Fibbers being the original one here, which is a funny little place. I don't mean that disparagingly to any Fibbers fans. It's a brilliant local haunt. Well hidden, you've got to know when it is to get there, but well worth looking out. Yeah, good pint in Fibbers. And I've got to say, I'm a big fan of McGerrigan's as well. There are a few McGerrigan's bars in town. They show all the games. You know, great atmosphere in there, obviously, particularly the Irish games. The place will always be hopping and the Guinness will be flowing.
Scott, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. We'll speak to you soon.
Very welcome, Rob. Thank you.
Now, we've just heard about Ravi's there. Rob, I know you're going to be all over that when you make your way out to Dubai. But I suppose you might say at the other end of the scale, if you're really into your kind of fine dining, Namos proves particularly popular, which is a Dior-themed restaurant that has live entertainment at your table, live singers and what is believed to be one of the world's best burrata salads. So if you're heading out to Dubai and you're feeling a bit fancy-wancy, make sure you get those reservations in.
I do love the fact that this podcast caters for every taste.
Exactly, caters for all.
Yes, that's a polite way of saying you've got the people that don't like spending money like myself and the people that very much do like spending money like yourself, Emma. That is the way of the world, isn't it? It's beautiful.
Well, Rob, I think it's fair to say there is something for all. So moving swiftly on, and with that in mind, tennis, Tom, is something that we've not mentioned yet. The ATP 500 event in Dubai also proves very popular.
Yeah, it's a great event. It used to be, when I was living here full time, it used to be my favourite 2 weeks of life in Dubai, because you would have the WTA tennis event the first week and then the ATP the second week. So you get the best of the women's tennis and then the men's tennis as well. And it was a truly spectacular couple of weeks. It was founded in 1993. It started the tournament, still going strong today. They get the biggest players. And it's a wonderful festival of tennis in the city. And everyone still loves it as well. It's just growing all the time, that one.
And on the subject of tennis, there's quite an iconic image that comes to mind. And I think I'm right in saying Andre Agassi hitting balls on top of the Burj. Is that right?
That's right. Years ago, yeah. Roger Federer and Agassi on the helipad on the top of the Burj Al Arab hotel, the seven-star hotel, so-called seven-star hotel. Rob, I'm not sure if I've bumped into you in there before. But, so they've done quite a few things on that helipad. Weirdly, landing helicopters on it is one of the least things they've done on there. But they've played a lot of sport up there. And Roger Federer and Andre Agassi hit a few balls up there years ago.
That's not the only kind of building of note in Dubai, though, is it, Tom? And I understand you've got history with it. Is that right?
The Burj Khalifa is, yeah, the other iconic building in Dubai. The world's tallest tower still is to this day. And it's a phenomenal sight. At the bottom of it, they have the Dubai Fountains, which is a wonderful place to go and have a look at in the evenings. But the Burj Khalifa, I do have a little story for you about the Burj Khalifa, because this, and this also just sort of shows you how much they love sport in this city in Dubai. It's a case of going back to the World Cup a few years ago, and what the Burj Khalifa did, they have this incredible setup of lights on the building, built into the building. And what they did for the World Cup, every time a team scored in the World Cup, they would light the entire tower up in the colours of that nation. So if it was England, it'd be red and white. If it was Brazil, the yellows and the greens, they would light the tower up in the colours of that nation's flag. And it was brilliant. And I was filming a piece about how they did this. And to film the piece, I had to hang out off the side of the building, you know, strapped in harnesses, and to tell the story properly and to explain how these lights worked on the side of the Burj Khalifa. So there we are, up on the 92nd floor, hanging off the side of it. And it was at that point I was told that only two other people had done the same thing. One of them was Tom Cruise, who, of course, filmed Mission Impossible off the side of the building. And the other one was Richard Hammond, who was filming a documentary there as well. And then they announced that they would give me a nickname, and it would be Tom, not Cruise. Because I was clearly a little scared.
I love the fact that earlier on when I was talking about the Dubai frame being 150 metres up in the air, you were like, don't you begin to tell me about that. Let me tell you a story.
Yeah. It was a great moment, but I was pleased to step back into the building after it.
Well, Tom, what an anecdote to finish this episode with. Just before you go, though, in each episode, we do like to try and learn a local word that our listeners can use when they're on the ground, just to make them really feel, I suppose, like one of the locals. So is there anything that comes to mind that our listeners might be able to use?
Well, after that story, I was just shouting help, but I don't know what the Arabic word is for it. but what one word I used to always love to say in Dubai, and still do when I visit the city, is very simple, shukran, which is thank you. And of course, it's that classic case of knowing one word and feeling like you know the whole language. But shukran is a useful word to have if you're coming to the city.
Well, that's just about it from Dubai. If you're travelling soon, check out Sport24's live sports schedule. You can find that at sport24live.com to make sure you won't miss any of the biggest sporting events live in the air or at sea. Sport24 really does have it all. It just leaves me to say a huge thank you to all of our guests, to Tom Bushell for brilliantly guiding us around the city. So thank you, Tom, or shukran, I should say.
Indeed, thank you very much, guys. And Emma, I'll see you at the Dubai World Cup. Rob, I'll see you in the Burj Al Arab.
That's the one.
You can follow more of Tom's adventures in the meantime on Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, and TikTok. That's at Sports Travel Tom. Thanks also to my trusty TikToking travel companion, Rob Adcock.
Emma, thank you.
We'll see you next time. Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear about other sporting cities such as Madrid, Paris, and New York. We'll be back soon exploring other destinations like Las Vegas, Singapore, and Rome. But from me, Emma Saunders, and the On Tour with Sport24 gang, it's goodbye. And until next time, safe travels.